Thank you for downloading and listening to this podcast. For more podcasts, including exclusive interviews and roundtable chats, please visit runthinkshootlive.com/listen.
What do you think of when you hear the words run, think, shoot, live? Well, you're listening to this podcast, so clearly you think of Half-Life. And those words are what's called a tagline. A tagline is like the secondary idea of a promotion. So you've got like Nokia connecting people, McDonald's loving it. Well, in 1998, Run, Think, Shoot, Live was the tagline for Half-Life. Now, that tagline was in many ways revolutionary at the time. Up until then, things had been different. 1993, we had Doom, and Doom was a shooter. 1994, we had System Shock. And System Shock was more of a thinker. And then we had Quake, which was maybe more of a combination of those two. And then 2 years later, we had Half-Life. And Half-Life changed the way people thought about shooters. It put together everything that perhaps Doom, System Shock, and Quake had done before. So this idea of all of those things in one was very attractive. And I learned something this morning, which was that up until 2008, Half-Life had sold over 20 million copies. Now, 20 million copies is a lot of game. To put that into perspective, System Shock, which was critically acclaimed, has sold 170,000. So we're talking a huge difference here in numbers. So when I started thinking about changing my domain, that was the name that I wanted because it encapsulated everything. And what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about this idea of player activity balance and the mapping challenge, which was called Run, Think, Shoot, Live. Now, to do that, I have three people with me. And first off, I have Nicole. Hello, Nicole.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, because you are completely new to my podcasts.
What to say? I've been playing and making and looking at and writing about and stuff, Half-Life 2 stuff for about, I don't know, 9-8 years now. And I've got hooked from the moment I first played Half-Life 2, and I really wanted to learn more about it, and that's why I got into the modding community, the map making stuff, and I've enjoyed it ever since.
So are you saying that you played Half-Life 2 before Half-Life 1?
Yes, I did.
Shock horror.
Shock, yeah. And another shock right after that, I did not play Half-Life 1 at all. Only played Black Mesa Source.
Wow. So you still haven't played Half-Life?
No. Never.
Shall I disconnect her voice? What do you think?
Get her out.
Get her out. And what about Opposing Force and Blue Shift?
No, I haven't played that either.
Oh my gosh. Do you have them?
No, I had never got around to buying them and playing them. I don't know why.
Okay, after this podcast, you and I will have a chat. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
All right. So you started with Half-Life 2 and you moved on, obviously. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not obviously, but you moved on to episode 1 and 2?
Yes.
You played those, yes?
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right, perfect. And how long after playing the game did you start mapping?
I don't know. It was sometime, maybe like a year or two later, when I first got the notion of that people were still creating their own maps and mods for that, and like getting to know how to load them in the game and how to put them in the right folders and stuff. And I was really I was just flashed by people could make stuff for a game that's already finished, and it's really cool, and some stuff was like same quality as the original game, and that was so, this was really amazing for me at the time, because I didn't know that much about modding until then. And yeah, I looked at some tutorials online and sort of tried to get to know how to do that myself.
Well, it still amazes me as well that we can do that. And you're right, some of those releases are as good as the games themselves. I don't know of any other field of interest where that happens. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying I don't know. Darren, Alistair, do you know of any other sort of area where people, amateurs, are as good as the professionals? Don't know. Maybe the listeners can tell us. Yeah. All right, so thank you, Nicole. Thank you. And joining us also is Alistair, aka Adimotion.
Hi.
How would you like me to address you? Adimotion or Alistair?
Alistair's fine. Thanks.
Alistair's. All right. So why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners as well?
Okay, so I've been lurking around on planetphilip.com for years. I first played Half-Life when I was pretty young, probably a lot younger than would be appropriate for such a kind of game. But yeah, and then probably around 2009, I discovered the Orange Box. So that's when I first played Half-Life 2. And then from there, found out about Planet Philip. And that was probably when I started learning mapping. But I actually started off with Half-Life 2 Deathmatch and with Alien Swarm, which I made a few pretty awful maps for, some attempts while I was learning. But pretty much the only things I've actually released have been through Planet Philip competitions.
Okay. And so you got the Orange Box 2009. That's 5 years after Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
Up until that point, you'd played Half-Life?
I played Half-Life 1 and Opposing Force, I think, but not any of the recent games.
All right. Interesting. Okay. And Blue Shift?
I've played it now, but I haven't played it at the time.
All right. Okay. I mean, you've added or entered a number of competitions. I can't remember how many, but it's got to be at least five or six. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's about five or six.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty cool. And now, how much mapping do you make? Do you do mostly for my competitions or for other stuff as well?
Well, I have the Beginningville competition where I made the first part of a mod. I'm still, in fact, working on the rest of that mod. Been years, but gradually sort of adding to that. But other than that, it's mostly just been competition entries.
Well, I mean, I feel good about that in the sense that I've helped initiate, you know, a start of something. Let's hope that you finish it.
Yeah, well, aim of the competition was sort of to complete it within the three and not still be doing it years afterwards.
Quite a few people start the maps, and ultimately my objective with them, the challenges, is to get people to you know, get in front of the editor and make things. And if they get released later or they don't, but they learn from it, then I still feel as though I've accomplished something. Obviously, we want more maps to play, but it's a process.
Yeah.
So, and the last one, but not least, is Darren Weeks, aka Custom Gamer Daz. How you doing, Daz?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Good.
thanks for having me on again.
You're most welcome. Most welcome. So we're not going to introduce you so much, unless you want to tell us, you know, go on. I'll give you 30 seconds. It's an interview.
Sure.
Sell yourself.
I make YouTube videos about level design. You can check me out at youtube.com/Darren.Weeks. If you're interested in level design, come and check out the videos. You might find something interesting. Aside from that, I make levels for Quake and the Half-Life series and stream silly games occasionally. That's the end.
Fair enough. All right, great. So at the introduction, I talked about this idea of player activity balance. And before we get down to the, you know, the maps themselves and the mod itself, I want to start with this idea. As mappers, and we'll start with you, Darren, as mappers, how much do you think about that before you even open the editor? And when I talk about balance, I'm talking about between exploring, puzzles, shooting, and story introduction. You want to start us off, Darren?
I think that's critical, really. You should really be thinking about the gameplay before you start placing brushes. I mean, concept, anyway. Any kind of Half-Life map should have all of those things in that. That's kind of the essence of Half-Life. You run, think, shoot, and survive, hopefully. Of course, the balance of how you do those things is up to the mapper, but generally I usually start with looking at lots and lots of reference images, concept art, stuff like that, trying to find a location, and then for me at least, that's when all the ideas come. I find a location I like, and then I kind of think, well, this would be cool in Half-Life. The player could go up there and do this, and then go down there and do that, and there could be a puzzle over here, and that's what really gets my creative juices going. But for other people, other people that I know can just kind of think a level up without any pictures or anything, and then just build it like from memory. It's pretty impressive. I can't do that.
Pretty cool. Playing by ear, perhaps, that would be an analogy, maybe.
Yeah.
Could be. Nicole, would you agree that a Half-Life map has to have those four elements or not?
Yes, definitely. And I think even that the community and the map makers are still so active, even after like Half-Life 2 being like recently had its 10-year anniversary, is because it has those elements, run, think, shoot, live, but not just, as you said in the beginning, not just separate things that exist in the game, but like interwoven in a really unique way that I don't think any game had before Half-Life. And it's because you have those elements and you can take them and combine them and modify upon them, and it gives the mapmakers a lot of freedom and space to explore ideas through this very simple concept of the Half-Life 2 gameplay. And that's what's, at least for me, what's really interesting about mapping and Source.
Okay. Alistair, anything to add?
Yeah, I agree. I think what the Half-Life series does better than still probably any other series is the immersion. So you're just put in like the world, and in any sort of good map and in Valve's official levels, it's like you're not playing through a level that someone's designed. It's like a real place that has an actual purpose. And I think that's the key of being successful in that kind of idea. And then within that, having the right balance of combat and puzzles and exploration and all these kind of different elements.
Yeah. I think I'd like to follow up on that point. When you talk about realism, in the previous games to that, it was pretty much, and Darren, feel free to correct me, it was pretty much just pushing buttons in the right order to open doors and find a button to open another door. But then suddenly Half-Life, you had other types of puzzles, but those puzzles were so well integrated into the game, they felt like they were real things about the game. And I think that's a huge difference. That was maybe one of the reasons it was successful.
Yeah, it made it much more relatable because you're dealing with a realistic environment. So things like, instead of just turning arbitrary wheel in like a Quake map or something where things are very kind of not real at all, where you're just hitting buttons and doors magically open, you're dealing with a real place. So you turn a valve wheel which sends air down this pipe which does this thing, and you can understand it as a player just by looking at the mechanism in the level. You understand how it works. So
exactly. Like,
did a really great job at that.
The tentacles is perhaps the perfect example. You know, you get there, you can see that you've got to get the power on and you've got to get the steam on or something. So you know pretty much what you've got to do. You know where you've got to go to do it, but it still all melds into one. As Nicole said, it's interwoven. You don't just solve a puzzle and then shoot. You have to shoot to solve the puzzle to get to the solution and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes, even today in recent games, it's like there's this clear difference between each part. Like you have cutscenes and stuff. And in Half-Life 2 or Half-Life, you don't have that. It's all the same. You can control the cutscenes basically, or you are in the cutscenes. And that's what creates this great immersion that there's no difference between this is the puzzle section and this is the and now yet go shoot a bit and then there's a cutscene. It's all like one.
One, yeah, you're right. Alistair?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Just the whole idea of it being a continuous thing without any breaks in it. It's just, I think, what makes it so successful.
And I think the phrase that they use, and I'm not sure, but this idea of environmental puzzle for me, that phrase gives it, it's part of the environment, of course. And Valve do such a good job of reusing basic ideas. I mean, if we think of Half-Life 2, I think one of the very first puzzles you come to is where you have that board in the initial sort of sewer section or canal section. And you must put all of those bricks on the board to run up the board to jump.
The infamous, what was it, seesaw puzzle, yeah.
Seesaw puzzle, okay. And then look what they did in Half-Life 1. They took that, in Episode 1, they took that simple idea and turned it into a bridge.
Yeah.
And you basically do exactly the same thing in Episode 1, but you're in a different environment. And it's a huge environment, but it's the same puzzle, and you just see it as a different thing. I mean, that's in sort of praise of Valve, but it is that idea of everything in one place. Okay, so let's talk about the mod. When I first announced the theme, I was excited because I thought that this could really be an interesting theme. I gave everybody a lot longer than usual. It was 30 minutes. So, Alistair, would you like to start with the idea of what was the first thing that went through your mind when you saw the theme itself?
Well, I think it's quite a broad theme in that, like, you could take any sort of setting, any sort of gameplay ideas, and we saw obviously there was a complete range. So I think to be honest, a lot of my maps would kind of follow that structure anyway, but it's quite a good way of sort of thinking, okay, so we've got to do something where we think, and then we've got to move into the shooting, and then, if that makes sense.
Yes. Okay. So were you excited, or from what you're saying, I'm assuming that you thought, okay, I can do a lot of things here because I normally do this anyway.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities from it.
Okay. Nicole?
I agree mostly. It was a bit of a weird theme because make a map about run, think, shoot, live is basically just saying make a Half-Life 2 map because it's already in most maps somewhere in there because that's the essence of Half-Life 2. What interested me was trying to work with those ideas and break them up a little, like not just make a standard Half-Life 2 map, but what can I do if I, for example, like split up each part and make them separate, or if I have some sort of, just work a little differently with what I usually would do.
Okay. So, I mean, you've entered one competition before, and I think I erroneously mentioned in the mod itself that this was your first entry. So my apologies for that. Your other entry? What was the first entry?
It was for a crossbow wheel called the Coriolis effect.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to look that up.
This huge map where you were running through an industrial environment, mostly with just a crossbow, and solving puzzles, shooting people, and progressing with basically just crossbow.
Okay. But when you saw this one, you were excited? You thought, okay, I'm going to do something different here.
Yeah. I wanted to really try make something that's a bit unusual and that originally I thought not many people would like because it would be so weird. But I got really excited of participating.
All right, good. And Darren, as a non-participant, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, basically what Nicole said, it's interesting, the theme, because it essentially is the DNA of Half-Life 2. So people had this really wide canvas to just basically build whatever they wanted. I thought the interesting thing about it was the breaking up, like Nicole said, of the four different things, and see how mappers dealt with like pulling apart the strands of it and seeing what you can do within those parts. And I think Nicole did a great job in her map of showing exactly how far you can take that idea. But I thought all the maps were pretty fun.
Yeah, they were. I mean, we don't want to get bogged down in this idea of what makes a good theme, but so many people keep asking me for different kinds of themes. But I felt that this one was limited enough to start you thinking creatively, but open enough for it to be set anywhere, any kind of style of game.
Yeah.
And it seemed to work out quite well. At the time of recording this podcast, we have 12 Play It Nows and 3 personal favourites. So it's probably one of the highest rated VIL competitions. Currently it only has 481 downloads, and some of the others have like 1,200 and stuff. But I'm just attributing that at the moment to the lack of visits on the site. There's no doubt that 3 or 4 years ago the site was busier because there were so many more releases happening regularly. Mm. So I mean, that's a good thing. So let's start talking about the individual entries, and we'll talk about them in the order that they would be, have been presented in the mod. The first one was From Ashes, from aka ES2Mur. So I loved the beginning, to be honest. That first few seconds where, you know, as soon as your hands come up to see that you got the suit, you're shot at, and it's like, oh, panic! And you have to run. You run into the light, which is kind of a, you know, are you going to die straight away? And then you're on the roof, and you've got, you know, to work your way through some buildings, and then some areas in a park, and then you come back, and the area has changed a little bit, and then there's this final battle with the tank and some grenades, which was not much fun. Yeah. Nicole, do you wanna start your thoughts on this one?
Yeah. About the beginning, I got really started when I started this map and panicked a bit, because I knew it's always, the maps would always start with the run section, but usually you've got a little bit of time exploring and taking your time getting used to the controls again and looking around a bit, and all of a sudden you were in this apartment building and people were behind you and go, and I wasn't prepared for that, so it was quite cool to have this adrenaline rush right at the beginning and get started that way.
Did you survive or did you die?
I did survive, but okay. just barely.
Okay, and the rest of the map, how were your thoughts?
I did like the which is something I think we will talk about in other entries as well, the reuse of space. Like, mm-hmm. you go through it and then you go through it again, but differently, and you circle around this environment. This was really nice, like seeing old parts you've visited previously, but like differently or maybe destroyed a bit. That was quite cool.
Yeah, you're right. It happened in three entries from 5, the reusable space. You're right.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I did not like the puzzle section as much because it was a bit too easy, I think.
Okay. I can't remember the puzzle. What was the puzzle
section?
It
was down at the train tracks where you have hit the switches. I think that was the puzzle section, at least. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Or maybe just before or after that, where you have to put the plugs in the sockets. Alistair, Darren, what do you think? Was that right?
I didn't really understand what I was doing in the puzzle, I think. It was sort of, you turned on some switches and then the train crashed, which was really cool, but... What was happening?
It kind of reminded me of a mod called Steam Train Tracks and Troubles or something, where there's one section where you have to put all of these valves on and off. And I solved it, but I have no idea how I solved it. and I'm imagining that everybody else was the same, unless they're much smarter than me, which is possible or probable. But you're right. In this one, it was just press a few buttons and something happens. It's not really a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool when the train crashed and you woke up. I'd forgotten about that part.
Yep.
All right. Alistair, what were your thoughts about From Ashes?
Yeah, I thought the chase at the start was really well done, because I think it's quite easy to have you just either being like hammered and just dying really easily, or it not being threatening and you can just sort of wander around. But I thought the balance was really well done, and it looked like a lot of time went into getting sort of that level, like, just right.
Yeah, because once you jumped across to the sort of the other building, you did have a chance to say, "Whew, okay, let me get my bearings and stuff." You're right.
Yeah, but I think that the start was definitely the best part of the map. I thought that towards the end, it seemed a little bit like they were just short on time with the sort of the tank battle, and then when you sort of had to walk back to the street afterwards.
Yeah.
But I guess that was probably just they didn't have enough time to add more detail to that part.
I suppose. I mean, I didn't know where to go after that tank battle. Yeah. I was kind of lost. Darren, you too?
Yeah. Again, the first half was definitely much more polished. Basically what Alistair said, the chase at the start was excellent. I find a lot of chase sequences, you either don't know where to go, you end up just kind of getting lost and then getting killed. Or, like Alistair said, there's never enough pressure and you don't feel like you have to run. But I think Estimer nailed it here. It did really well. The second half of the map, it really lost steam quite quickly. And there's a couple of issues of like invisible walls blocking you off until you do a certain thing. Mm-hmm. I know when I first played the map, I was trying to get down to where the APC was by like dropping down onto the street.
Oh, me too.
And I think there was just a kill trigger there, which just kept on killing me when I dropped.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really quite sure what I was meant to do because they had all the mines around the APC as well. I thought maybe I have to like get them to detonate or something. You know, it was a bit confusing.
It's true. And I tried dropping down as well, and I died at least once. So, but again, we got this 10-day limit. In this case, it was 30. So there was more time, but it's clear that this was more effort at the beginning than at the end. I think that's a fair thing to say.
Yeah, for sure. The first half was very well polished.
Yeah. All right, now I'd just like to remind my guests, there's no swearing on this show because we're about to talk about the second entry.
Yes.
Okay, that's a bit mean.
Well, maybe, but when you first start it, I was quite interested. I mean, I don't really mind dev textures. I mean, I'm quite happy to play some things with some dev textures. And I saw this and I thought, oh, okay, this will be fun. But then 5 minutes, I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. I'm a terrible runner and jumper. And the frustration level of this one, I don't know. Did anybody actually beat it without cheating the first part?
No.
Nope.
No.
Okay, all right, I don't feel so bad now. I think somebody did, but you've got to be one of these people who are good. And even when I no-clipped, I couldn't get it to work properly, but that was because I think I needed to press some buttons to get some solids instead of... Anyway, all right, so the second part. I actually managed to figure the second part out for myself. I'm quite pleased with myself. It took a while to realise that there was swapping textures, but that really... more luck than judgment, I think. But this one was very much run, swear, think, swear, shoot, swear, live, really swear. I think there was a lot of swearing in there. And then the shooting section was just, I don't know, I was still on God mode by then. And I don't know, I mean, how there's never been a map made with more man hacks. And less ammunition, that's for sure. And then the shooting section was actually quite good. I wish I hadn't sort of taken off I'd left on the guard mode. And there's that sort of part where you're in the showers and I don't know what else to call it. But that section actually looked quite good. And the enters the mapper's name is Fufino. Okay, Fufino, something like this. Okay, Vincent. All right, that's better. And his other maps were quite good. I mean, they're set in real settings and they're quite interesting to play. So that's enough of me. Nicole, your turn.
I have an idea about this map because, and this is just a thought, but maybe they were trying to like show each part separately, like the run and the think and like not making it very good because each, like we said earlier, just shooting and just running on its own isn't what Half-Life 2 is about. And then in the last part, combining each element a little bit, because there was a little bit of thinking and a little bit of shooting and running also, I think, like a bit of each. And this was the part that shined, even though I couldn't really play it because I got very lost somewhere between no clipping. And I think they were trying to show that living or the idea of live in Source is the combination of everything. And that's what makes it good, what makes a Source map only somewhat interesting.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I don't think they really managed it that well, because just clicking random buttons for the think section is...
It's not thinking. Yeah, it's guessing. It's,
yeah.
You know. All right, Alistair?
Yeah.
Rip into it, maybe. Go for it.
I don't think I can comment that much, since I kind of gave up when I saw the think section. And it was just loads of random buttons, and it wasn't really clear what they were doing or whether you pressed the right one or not. So, yeah, I can't really say much.
Did you play the section of the shoot, though?
No, I couldn't work out where to noclip to start it.
Properly, oh, okay. So. Yeah, it's a shame, because I do think that section on its own, that section was really quite nice, but it's not on its own. It's part of something bigger, and you have to take that into account. So, fair enough. Darren?
Yeah, again, I don't really mind playing dev textured maps so much, as long as the gameplay is good. The run section I just found way too difficult. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of the laser beam coming up as like a soft timer. I thought that was really cool. Okay. And you're like, it gives you that impetus to run because something's coming to get you. I thought that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But just some of the jumps were way too hard for me to do. Maybe I suck, I don't know. But yeah, I tried it must like 10 times at least, and I just couldn't do it, so I noclipped. And the problem with the secondary, with the think part, I didn't notice that the rooms were changing. Like, I think it was the texture on the ceiling was different in each room or something like that.
No, basically, in the first two rooms, they swapped the grey and the orange.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got grey walls and orange ceiling, yeah. And then the second room is orange walls and grey ceiling.
Okay, yeah, I just didn't notice that. So I was on stream just running around, pressing all the buttons. Like, I thought I was being teleported back to the beginning of the same room every time. So I was just getting so confused, and eventually I just gave up and noclipped around. I ended up...
But that in its... Sorry.
No, go on.
Go on. No, you go.
I was just saying I eventually noclipped around, found the shooting part, but had the same problem as Alistair, where I didn't know where to go to play that section properly. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's interesting, though, in an abstract sense, that most people didn't notice the difference in the textures. And there's lessons to be learned there that we don't see as much as perhaps A, we should, or as B, the mappers think we should, or C, mappers want us to.
All the time. I mean,
if we can't tell the difference between two different textures, what does that say about our experience of playing games? I mean, and they're not like subtle textures. It's not like orange and dark orange. It's like grey and orange. I don't know.
Perhaps if the textures had been completely different colors, like instead of having orange and gray being changed, it like changed from orange and gray to like concrete with a proper textured ceiling, you'd instantly notice because it's completely different. It just wasn't highlighted enough to the player. And because the rooms are the same shape as well, and it's got the same buttons in the same places, it looks so similar. That's the problem. It needs to be called out better.
Yeah, I've always thought about having a competition called Psychologicalville, where you sort of play these tricks on people and see how they notice and stuff. Anything to add, Nicole?
About the ending, which is something I think no one should ever do, is like reuse long speeches or content from the original game without adding something new to it, because it was just a G-Man speak. I think it was a complete ending where he talks of Half-Life 2, and it was really boring and didn't add anything to the map. Because I got the idea it's about G-Man and he's teleporting you around and he's being a bit of a mean person to you. But sitting there at the end and listening to it was just anticlimactic.
Yeah, it was. And I only stayed hoping something else was going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, having known, if somebody had said, oh, at the end when the speech starts, everybody would just turn it straight off. And of course, that's a waste of everybody's time in that case.
And leaves a bitter taste at the end somehow.
Yeah, it does. It does. So now we're going to start talking about the next map. And I'm actually going to let Nicole start this one because I know she's not happy.
Yeah,
actually, that's too strong. But okay, Nicole, take us away.
Alistair, I have a big concern I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
And it's about the use of end line guards. Don't. Right. Just don't. It's too stressful for me. I nearly had a heart attack, and I don't like it at all.
I hate them as well. I have to second you.
I'm only joking, of course. It was a really amazing part. I think it was the best run section in a sense, because you're even more than from Asher, you're just panicking and you're hearing this big thing snorting behind you and galloping, and all you can really think about is run. And that was, I think, a good start.
It was. And it wasn't too long. I mean, I hate antlion guards. Yeah. I do. But it wasn't that long. And I think I managed to pass it the first time I played it. So, you know, that's not a bad thing. If I'd have died plenty of times, then it would have been a bad thing. So, Darren, do you want to start before Alistair explains himself?
Yeah. I like the introduction of the antlion guard, as in you walk into the cavern and you see it come up out of the ground on the opposite side, but it has to make its way around to get to you. So you have this moment of realization, oh, beep, it's coming to get me. I'm going to run the opposite direction. I had an idea of picking up the rocks on the ground, the gravity gun, and trying to shoot it with them, but that didn't work, so I just carried on running. But yeah, I thought it was... I don't mind antlion guards at all. I think they're very environment-dependent. You have to kind of build the environment to suit the encounter with these quite a lot. But I thought Alistair did a good job here.
All right, so we're going to carry on talking about it, and then we're going to give you a chance to defend yourself, if that's okay, Alistair.
Okay, that's
right.
Yeah.
All right, so the next part, then, you get outside, and that's nice. I like the outside. You've got this, you know, snow-covered, surface tension-style area, and you're always thinking, okay, you've got this clear objective. I'm going to make my way to here, and that's obviously a great thing to do in a map. You know, show the player where they've got to get to, and then just let them get there. I thought the think section was a little bit weak, turning the things to get the power on. Maybe that's a bit harsh. Darren, you want
to? Well, first of all, yeah, let's talk about the visual part here, because I love the snow theme. That was super cool. There's been a couple of maps with snow themes, I think, but I think this is probably one of my favorite ones. It's very, very cool. That whole outdoor area was great. But yeah, the puzzle, sorry. Getting sidetracked.
That's all right, don't worry.
Yeah, the thing is, I didn't know what the puzzle was going to do until I did it, and then the bridge was on, and I was like, I guess the puzzle turned the bridge on. I wasn't too sure. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the different colours on the control panel before the bridge, and that's when it clicked. So I think if I'd seen the control panel with like three red lights before actually finding the contraption to do the puzzle, it might have read a bit better.
Okay.
But the puzzle itself is all right.
Sorry, Darren. Nicole?
I had also a bit of trouble with that, because I didn't realise that you could continually turn them, because there were the buttons, and usually you only press them once and they activate or deactivate something. And they're in original Half-Life 2, they are not used to be continually pressed. So I just couldn't figure out that you could turn them if you hold E. And that was a bit of a trouble for me. But I think it was a cool idea to have this color code, and you have to input it somehow. But maybe it should have been a bit more clear where to input it and how you interact with it.
Okay. And then once we're across the bridge, we sort of work our way up the wall. And that's pretty cool, trying to figure out where to go. That was thunder, in case you heard that. And I managed to, at this point, I managed to get out of the map. I sort of
I had an interesting experience here as well.
sort of fell down, slid down the wall. So instead of hitting the wall, I was sliding it. And then I sort of had a run around and, you know, but those things happen. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not always going to say it's a terrible map just because of that, because clearly that's not the case. And then you work your way through the rest of the building and you have this tremendous, and it is a tremendous encounter, but it's very difficult. That ending I must have played 3 or 4 times, and probably my live stream viewers were probably pulling their hair out watching me. And I tried different tactics, you know, moving things around, preparing. And I do like that aspect that I had enough time that I can change the environment to give myself a chance. Mm. And then we got the twist at the end, which was, you know, okay, that was kind of cool. I like that. So, Nicole, what were your thoughts after the bridge?
You forgot a part where you sneak into the Combine headquarters, I guess, which I like because I don't think for you, when I watched your stream, it happened, but the Combine didn't notice me when I first got out of the hole and I could like plan a bit and look around from a little corner and prepare a bit.
Okay.
Which was quite cool, but it was also a bit difficult.
Mm.
What I really liked though was when after that, when you go outside and the Antlion guard comes back.
Yes, I'd forgotten about that. That was a nice touch.
Really cool.
And it's an unusual area to fight as well. Normally, as Darren was saying earlier, you know, you build your environments around the Antlion. That initially I would have said, oh, that's a terrible place to put the Antlion. But it worked quite well because I had some cover. I could sort of go up the sort of side steps. But you have to go down at some point because you need more ammo or something. Darren?
Yeah, this area was kind of cool. Like Nicole said, I love the fact that you can come up into the room without being spotted. Because so many maps, it's kind of very, very authored in that the combat encounter starts with like an enemy spotting you that the level designer has deliberately placed there to spot you. And then that can kind of kick off a whole bunch of scripts or, you know, whatever to set up the encounter. I really like it when the player has a say in that. Like, I'm going to attack this guy first, and then I'm going to do this and do that, and then the encounter will react to how I start it rather than how the level designer wants to start it. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool when people can sneak that into their levels in whatever way possible.
Okay.
But, yeah, the fight here was cool in that you can bait out the Antlion guard and then let the Combine soldiers deal with it almost. I mean, inevitably they all end up dying, but they can do a fair amount of damage to it. The only problem I had with the area was that you can kind of sit up on the upper level and the Antlion guard just can't get to you, so there's absolutely no threat there. I think if there had been a way for him to come up there and kind of knock you down, that would be pretty cool. But aside from
Forgive
that, it was
me
fun.
If I remember, but I think I killed the Antlion guard on my own. I'm not sure. I sort of saw those as separate elements. I killed a few Combine. I went outside. The Antlion bust through the door.
Yep.
I killed the Antlion, and then more Combine came in.
I think what happened to me was there must have been like a Combine soldier in the next area that spotted the Antlion guard, which then triggered all the other Combine soldiers to like come into the room. Oh. And then the Antlion guard ran into their area and started killing all of them as well.
Oh, okay.
So I was just kind of sitting up on the upper area, and all you could just hear was gunfire and people dying. And I was like, I'll just wait for this commotion to calm down a bit.
Yeah, right, well, okay. What was supposed to happen was that sort of the guard chases you in back into the room, and then the Combine come and fight it, and you're sort of like a third party while they're having a fight. But I have to admit, it didn't really work very well. So it's understandable that it happened differently for everyone who played it.
Mm. All about the end.
Cool in a way, though, as well, because depending on how people play it, the map is different. Even if it's kind of perhaps a bit unintentional, I still think it's kind of cool.
All right, tell us about the end.
Eh?
With the hunter, the end with the hunter and that sort of little section there.
Yeah, okay. So if I was going back to it and sort of improving it, I would definitely put like a lot more space, probably like a side area that you could run through, because you do kind of get pinned down into the corners quite easily. And it's just really a case of a combination of me not having enough time and not having it tested well enough that meant it was probably too difficult.
Which is really a shame, because if you just improved the areas, made them bigger, I think that would have improved the final fight a lot. Just having a bit more space to navigate around would have made it really amazing. And it's really sad that you didn't have the time to add that.
Yeah, I mean, it was in many ways my favorite battle from the whole pack. In many ways, maybe because I died so many times, and I know that sounds silly, but for me, the more I die, the harder it is. And I only play on easy, so if I die on easy, then it must be a pretty difficult section. But I did feel a lot of, you know, relief at beating it, and you know, my save button got used quite a lot in that particular section. But it is, I don't know, I might sort of ask you to make a map just with that section again, you know, starting from just as you more or less enter that room until the end. Is that something that you'd be not interested in doing, but yeah, interested in doing? Would you do something like that?
Maybe, I'd consider it, yeah.
So I mean, not the whole...
Like create a different map and use that as part of it, or just release that part again?
Just that part, you know, we can forget... We don't have to forget, but we can forget getting into that area. But it would be interesting to see how you would improve that particular area. Maybe that could be a challenge that I set to mappers at various points in the year. You know, version 2 or update version or something.
Maybe that would be a cool idea for a will competition, the final stand will.
Yeah, well, I've talked about Bossville before. But the thing about Bossville is there's a lot of build-up, and if you just have a boss level, it might not have the same feeling as it does when you're working towards it. But yeah, certainly we could try that. Okay then, so now on to Nicole's map. Would Darren or Alistair like to start, or should I carry on? Anybody?
Yeah, sure. So this is one I voted for in the competition. Screams of glee while playing this on my live stream. I thought it was so funny.
Yeah, me too.
But it's a brilliant deconstruction of the theme where, like Nicole said, it's interesting kind of laying out each part of Half-Life's DNA, and she managed to kind of separate them but interwove them slightly with a bit of story and, you know, some humor. And it felt a little bit like going behind the scenes in Portal, you know, when you get to go see all the kind of inner workings of the portal chambers. The little bit of Stanley Parable in there as well, I think. I haven't played Stanley Parable, but that's what a lot of people tell me.
Yeah, there is. I've only played the demo, but there's this kind of like being talked to, and you're, you know, breaking the fourth wall in some
exactly.
ways.
Yeah, a lot of fourth wall breaking going on. But it worked in this environment because it was so kind of crazy. And then I really felt like at the end where you kind of, it felt like you were outside of the map looking in. But it just worked because it felt like, again, you're going behind the scenes. It felt like you even broken the level designer's vision of the map by the end. It was really cool. So, yeah I love this one.
Alistair?
Yeah, I really liked it as well. I liked at the start, you kind of play with expectations. So you've got the run part. And just for quite a while, you were just running down like an untextured playing corridor. You're like, what's happening? Is this what the actual map is? And then you're like, oh, this isn't very interesting. And then you jump into that really cool bit where you have to escape from the fire. It's like, oh, I see what you're doing here. So pretty cool, yeah.
I love that little run section with the fire. I mean, Nicole said that maybe the, you know, From Ashes had the best one, but I really enjoyed this, to be honest. It was enough pressure, as Darren's been mentioning, to feel that I'd really got to go, but it wasn't too hard that I die straight away. And so that was a very clever section. All right, take us on to the next one, Alistair. The Think.
That was hilarious. I love that. You're just typing in numbers. And I thought it was quite fun how the door opened anyway quite soon. Mm-hmm. And I watched a couple of people playing it and just seeing how long people kept pressing the buttons when they had a route to leave anyway. Just to see
if something else would happen. I did for a lot longer than I perhaps should. And I got, well, there was one of the puzzles that I didn't realize it was minus 70. It was like, you know, okay. And I was like nervous because I was playing this live and I was like, okay, I'm not the most intelligent person, but I should be able to solve this. Nicole, let me just ask you to jump in quickly. How many puzzles are there for that particular section?
I think about 40 different.
Okay. I think I did 39 then. That's how it felt.
And if I can interrupt a bit.
Of course.
While you were talking about that section, it was the most fun for me to watch other people play because it's...
Oh, okay.
I loved it so much that people actually... It worked for people because, like, you get the answer... The easy... 1 + 1 = 20 × 2, and then you get things like jump 3 times, and people just they jumped, and I really was really happy that it just, I don't know, it people.
Yeah, that was my favorite part. I think.
Just... How long did you take to sort of think of that particular concept?
I don't know. It was one of the things that I thought up very early in the development, and which stayed mostly like it was from what I originally planned. I just was looking for something that was really puzzle-like and really sort of stupid puzzle-like, and that's the best I could come up with was you're in a classroom and you have to solve riddles on a blackboard.
Very clever. Does anything special happen when you complete all of the 40 puzzles?
No, sadly no.
Oh, okay. All right. It could have been like a little Easter egg. All right, and the next section, Darren, you take us on to the next section.
Oh, what are we run through? Oh, the shooting part, yes. it was a cool arena. Again, it was kind of nice where I think it's on like a timer when you go into it, so it just, oh no, you hit a button, don't you, to bring the lift down.
You do.
That's right. Yeah,
you set it up and then you hit a button. That would have been perfect for an ambush field entry, actually, that one.
It was cool though, because you understood what you had to do. You had to wait for the lift to get down and then ride it up, and then the enemies start pouring in, so it's obvious you just have to survive for a certain amount of time. But the arena was fun, you know, multiple levels, lots of cover, exploding barrels everywhere, that's always good. Yeah, it was fun. I liked it.
Alistair?
Yeah, I also got. I think I managed to get myself stuck behind some of the machinery. I had to no clip out, but that's fine. I thought it was a really good fight, and yeah, I think it was just like the right length as well. It didn't drag on too much.
Okay, and then we're on to the last section, the sort of the live section, where you kind of essentially go in the background of the background.
Yeah.
You sort of, the first thing you realize is you're back at the start. And I thought, okay, am I supposed to play again? And again, we're reusing space. So that was, you know, an efficient way of doing things. And I don't have enough screenshots, but I only sort of put 5. And then you're sort of right out and you seem to be floating on air. And as Nicole knows, my one criticism was that towards the end, you have this jumping puzzle, which is not particularly difficult. But up until then, there was a beautiful flow to it. And I had to do that jumping puzzle twice, and I felt it just spoiled that flow. Alistair, would you agree, or was it just me being bad at jumping?
I don't know. I didn't think it was that much of an issue, but I can see why if you got stuck there for a bit, then it would sort of break. Because you have the flow and the dialogue's coming up on the screen, and I suppose if there's a big break in it, then yeah.
Darren?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't have any problem with the jumping section, but I agree that, you know, if you did fall off or fail in some way, then yeah, it would break the flow. But I really enjoyed this final section. It was kind of taking you back to everything you've done before, but in a different context. And again, just kind of getting that peek behind the scenes and walking outside of the level. That's what it felt like. It was really cool. I mean, perhaps I enjoyed it even more as a level designer, because it really felt like I'd gone out of bounds and like completely outside the level, but everything was still working, so it had this weird kind of feeling to it that was like, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite entries of all of the competitions. So, Nicole, I want to sort of congratulate you on being joint winner at this point. Fantastic entry. Well done. Really, really clever.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You have to enter other competitions now, Nathan. Now you know that, don't
okay.
you?
Pressure's
on. You set the bar now. Yeah.
You set the bar, yeah, exactly. Any final words on the level, Alistair?
Not really. Just thought, yeah, it was okay. Really good. I thought the effect, how did you actually do the part at the very end where you're outside the level? Because is it all contained in a big skybox or?
I hope someone was asked that because it's a bit crazy. It's like partly bad with like interconnecting each part of the level so that you can see them even if they're not there. So like, an error with the map in some sort of way. And the other half is, as you said, actually a skybox where I scaled the whole level down and put it into this 3D skybox to make it look like you're looking at the level, but it's actually just the scaled down version of the geometry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see how that works. Yeah, that's cool. Nice.
Would you be willing to release the source files for this, Nicole? Don't feel any pressure. If you
definitely.
Say no problem. All right, okay. I'll add them to the
I would
podcast.
Love if people would just look through all that I've done and pick it apart and reuse it maybe in some other context or something. That would be really nice for me.
Reuseville, perhaps. Everything is Ville now. I sort of walk into the kitchen and something happens and I say Toasterville. And it's like, okay. I have to be careful.
I would participate in Toasterville, definitely.
All right. And Alistair, can you introduce the last level for us, please? Terminal.
Terminal. So this is the one in the Citadel environment. And you start off in that little pod. So right from the start, you sort of see the whole map, I think. And you've got those really clever sort of cutscenes that are like overlaid on the screen.
That was clever.
Yeah.
Okay. And I found it difficult at first. I got lost and I think I watched Darren, who jumped over a balcony because that seemed the only way to go. Yeah. And I did exactly the same at least twice. And then I realized that that's actually to do with texturing and lighting. There is a way to the left, but it doesn't look like it. It's like dark and it looks like a wall.
Yeah.
So I found the run section quite difficult at the beginning.
Yeah, I think I failed it the first time as well, because at one point, I think if you're too slow, then some combine that are supposed to be like chasing you end up ahead of you.
Correct.
But otherwise,
the ammunition crate, if you haven't gone past that too early, they come around the corner and you've got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So I agree. Nicole, how did you find the run section here?
I had the same problem with the balcony bit where I jumped down, I think, 5 times and just getting mad at where do I have to go? And then I turn around and there's like this little corner where the big way to go forward, and I just missed that somehow. But what I really liked was the transition from that part to the next one, where now the tables are turned and you're not running anymore, you're sneaking around. And that's, I think it worked really nice how they transitioned between each part.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and that takes us into the sort of the think section, which is more of a jumping puzzle than a thinking section, but you still have to think about which way to go, I suppose. Darren, how do you feel about that?
I think the problem with it was because the lighting's very uniform around the entire map, areas perhaps don't stand out as well as they do in other maps. Like, there's no real big like lighting spotlights and things like that, so everything ends up looking the same, which... really messed me up during the run section and jumping off cliffs. You know what? I can't remember the think section.
Well, I think what I'm thinking it? The think was the laser beams where you had to jump over the different laser
beams. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be the think section to me. Alistair,
yeah, that's
Nicole,
right.
You agree?
Yeah, I think it was.
Was there also a part with the energy balls that you had to jump around as well?
True.
That sort of tunnel, but yeah. I thought the other laser puzzle was all right.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
It was a bit more like sneaking instead of thinking.
It didn't make sense to me until I saw that some of the lasers were flickering and that you could perhaps, you know, get past them like that. And then as soon as I noticed that, it all kind of fell into place. Like, I have to get up there and jump across that and get through that beam when it's off and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a difference if they're flickering. Otherwise, you have to think about jumping over them because you can't. There's only one you can walk under. The rest are too low.
Yeah.
So that makes a difference. But then that final section is a very much a wow section. You've already seen it in the introduction.
Mm.
You kind of get to this point where you've loaded up on ammunition and health and suit armor and all of that, and you sort of get on this train. And actually, that part was a little difficult as well. There is a red light that sort of, or a green light perhaps, that shows you where to go. But it took a while for me to figure that part out as well.
Yeah,
did anybody else have trouble?
Yeah, I did. I ended up kind of jumping down onto the railway where the train is and like trying to walk along the railway, and that didn't work. And a part of it was clipped off as well. So I did get quite confused at that section. But
actually, I'm thinking about the section before that. You're talking about the section where...
Right at the end,
The circular thing has already gone up.
Yeah, that's right.
And you've got a red light and you have to jump down. I'm thinking about getting the train to go up.
Oh, I see.
Because it seemed like more of it was just like a balcony. It didn't seem like it was an entrance to a particular area.
Yeah.
Anybody else have trouble? Maybe not. Okay. I mean, this is the problem, that sometimes when a level is so good, you end up focusing on the small little problems because you just want to talk about something that could be improved. But, I mean, it is a small problem.
I think it just comes back to a lot of the areas just end up looking the same. And it's kind of a hard problem to solve with like a combined Citadel environment. There's limited textures and props you can use. But I just think that perhaps lighting is an area that could be improved here to really give areas a different look, like especially because everything looks so uniform, like I already mentioned. It hurts.
Yeah, it does. Nicole?
Yeah, I agree. I think towards the end, it got a bit weird with geometry and the path the player has to take. And especially what we thought you were just talking about, the ending bit where you have to jump to
the ladder.
You're on this sort of train tracks, and then you jump to a little outcropping and then to the ladder, and it was a bit weird to make those small jumps that it looked more like detail, not really like a path you have to take. It was like jumping out of almost like if you were trying to get out of the level, like not the right way to go. So that was a bit strange.
Did you jump on the tracks as well and walk along to the end of the door?
Yeah, I got so confused there. I had to try it a couple of times to find where I was supposed to go.
Okay. Alistair, you too?
Yeah, I was the same. I think I ran down to the sort of along the train track to the back gate, thinking I could sort of go through there. But yeah, because it was kind of like a ladder that was on one of the props, I think. And it's just, you don't really make the connection that you're supposed to go in that way at all.
Yeah. But, I mean, all in all, that was a fantastic entry and a deserved joint winner. I mean, it was a completely different style from Nicole's entry. But it was fantastic. I don't think anybody would disagree with me, would you?
Yeah. No, it was good.
I agree completely.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I really loved the slow spinning circular lift at the end, like taking you up. It reminds me of On a Rail in Half-Life, where you're going up the, was it On a Rail or was it We've Got Hostiles? I can't remember. Where you're,
maybe
you're on
a rail,
the spinning lift going up and the soldiers are shooting at you. It reminded me a lot of that. I thought it was really cool. You have to like keep moving to change cover because it's spinning. It makes the combat really interesting. I love that part.
It does, yeah.
I would have thought if it would.
Oh, sorry.
I would have thought if it would have been a bit longer or more fighting on that platform because it was, really amazing. Like spinning around and the combines are walking around the platforms at the edge.
I thought something might have happened to the actual train on it. Like perhaps it gets knocked off or something. You have to like move. You know, there's loads of stuff you could do with that. Yeah.
Alistair?
Yeah, I basically agree with everyone else, I think. I thought the combat at the end, I thought it was okay. I suppose you could have added more to it, but I thought it was pretty good.
Well, on my second playthrough, which I have something to tell you about at the end, I actually ran out of ammo, so I only had the crowbar left. And when there's like a couple of soldiers at the top, if you'd have had too much, unless you'd have had some way of restocking, it might have,
yeah,
it might have been difficult. Because once you're on there, you've got no way of getting anything else. So, okay. And just to finish with, it's actually possible to finish the level without jumping on the train. What happens is that if you play it, just as you get to the edge of that sort of walkway where you think that you're supposed to jump across, the train starts. So I said, okay, I'm going to see what happens if I just stay here. You know, will I die? And, you know, but no, if you just stay there, then it fades to white and you're seen still on the train. So you can escape without escaping.
Magic.
Maybe it was just little quirks towards the end because they just ran out of time at the end, like many other, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the problem is that if I'd have made it 45 days, for example, then people would have been more ambitious and there would have been... There's never enough time, is there, to finish things perfectly.
I mean, if you increase even the time, people will just scale it up more and make more mistakes, I think.
Yeah. Maybe what I'll do, perhaps I shouldn't even say this on a podcast, is I'll tell people, you're right, you've got 20 days. And then when, like one day before, okay, I'm going to give you another 5. just to give them an extra time to sort of finish things
up. Oh, sweet polish time. Thank you.
Yeah. Actually, what I could do is I could do where you have to send me your entry, but I give you 5 days for you to change the polish, but no big things, you know?
Mm.
That could be one. All right, so we're pretty much at the end here. Overall, I'm very pleased with the way things turned out, and I'm pleased that we had two different winners. We had a very creative, out-of-the-box winner with Nicole, and then we had a very typical Half-Life 2, everything integrated, felt like a whole world winner. So I'm pleased about that. Any final thoughts, Darren?
Yeah, it's a great pack, lots of variety. It's cool to see the theme deconstructed in the ways it was, especially Nicole's entry. I'm just in love with that map. I think it's great. Yeah, more please.
Yeah, I mean, and we got a variety as well. We got like we got the snow from Alistair. Yep. We got the city from Estomer. So there's that variety as well. Alistair, final words?
Yeah, I really enjoyed making the entry. I know there's things that could be improved, but yeah, I enjoyed making it. I enjoyed playing all the maps, with possibly the exception of G-Man. So yeah, it was a really good competition.
Excellent. Nicole?
Yeah, I also had a lot of fun making the map, and even especially since it's been such a long time since I last mapped for Half-Life 2. It felt great getting into it again, and I think it's a good start off for 2015, and I hope to see more like it very soon.
Yeah, I'm hoping to have themes that are open but not too open, and challenging but not too challenging this year. So actually, while we're talking about that, what's everybody's thoughts about the Cityville? Darren, what do you think? City Street, sorry. City
yeah,
Streetsville.
I mean,
come on, be honest. It's okay. I
can't,
hate you anyway.
I was going to enter the next competition if I liked the theme. And when I heard of this one, I just couldn't think of anything that I wanted to make in it. But it's not a bad theme. It just doesn't interest me personally.
All right, fair enough. Nicole?
Yeah, me too. I think it can be a bit easy for mappers, because it can lead to a bit of simple maps. But I think if some people might work a bit with the theme, there could be some interesting stuff. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to it, though.
All right, fingers crossed. And Alistair?
Yeah, I think it has a lot of potential for good maps. I can't enter it myself. I just don't have time. But hopefully we'll get a lot of entries. And...
Okay. All right. Perfect. So I'd like to thank you all for coming along and taking the time to share your thoughts and ideas with me. It's very much appreciated. Hopefully you can come on again if you enter some other competitions. And we're done for today. So look out for this podcast on the website. And please, if you have time, answer any questions that the listeners or readers might have. So thanks for coming.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Remember, finishing Half-Life is just the beginning. RunThinkShootLive.com lists and reviews single-player maps and mods from the Half-Life series of games.